Okay, and we are recording. My name is Annalise Poisson, and I'm here with Allison Oscar. Today's date is April 28th, 2021. The time is 7:06 p.m. I am in Amherst, New Hampshire, and the interviewee is in Burlington, Vermont. So, Allison, I want to briefly review the informed consent and deed of gift document that you signed. So this interview is for the COVID-19 Oral History Project, which is associated with the Journal of the Plague Year, a COVID-19 archive. The COVID-19 Oral History Project is a rapid response oral history focused on archiving the lived experience of the COVID-19 epidemic. We have designed this project so that professional researchers and the broader public can create and upload their oral histories to our open access and open source database. This study will help us collect narratives and understandings about COVID-19, as well as help us better understand the impacts of the pandemic over time. The recordings, demographic information, and the verbatim transcripts will be deposited in the Journal of the Plague Year, a COVID-19 archive, and the Indiana University Library System for the use of researchers and the general public. Do you have any questions right now about the project that I can answer?
None at all, thank you.
Taking part in the study is voluntary, so you may choose not to take part or you may leave the study at any time. Leaving the study will not result in any penalty or loss of benefits to which you're entitled. Your decision whether or not to participate in the study will not affect your current or future relations with Indiana University, IUPUI, or the IUPUI Arts and Humanities Institute. And participating in this project means that your interview will be recorded in digital video and or audio format and may be transcribed. And the recordings and possible transcriptions of my interview, copies of any supplementary documents or additional photos that you wish to share, and the informed consent and deed of gift may be deposited in the Journal of the Plague Year, a COVID-19 archive, and the Indiana University Library System. And they will both be available to both researchers and the general public. And your names and other means of identification will not be confidential. Again, do you have any questions?
No.
Okay. In addition to your signed document, would you please offer a verbal confirmation that you understand and agree to these terms?
I do understand and agree those terms.
I am also asking that you verbally confirm that you have agreed that your interview will be made available under the following license, the Creative Commons Attribution Non-Commercial Sharealike 4.0 International license.
Yes.
And finally, I want to ask for a verbal confirmation that you have agreed that your interview will be made available to the public immediately.
Yes.
Okay, awesome. Thank you for all of that. I guess to just get started, would you tell us your name and just like the primary things you do on a day-to-day basis, your job, any other hobbies you might have?
Sure. So I'm Allison Oscar. I live in Burlington, Vermont, and I am a financial analyst for the hospital here in Burlington. And I've been working there for about 6 years. And outside of work, I live alone with my cat, and I garden and like to grow my own food and like to hang out in front with my friends.
So as you know, all of these questions are primarily about COVID-19 and how the pandemic has impacted your life. So I guess my first question about that topic is, when you first learned about COVID-19, what were your thoughts about it? And how have your thoughts changed since then?
So when I first heard about COVID-19, I didn't really think it was going to impact me. I thought it was something that was happening globally and not going to hit little Vermont, because we are kind of special in not dealing with a lot of global crises. But working in the medical field, we were educated to show how important it was and how serious it was right away. And so now, now it feels like it's just part of regular life. They talk about getting your COVID vaccine every year, sort of like you get your flu shot every year. And so I know we're still in a crisis, but it seems like we're living in a new normal now.
Yeah. Yeah. And you talked about your regular life. So I guess like all of your impact or all of your hobbies that you had before, how have you seen those been impacted by the pandemic? Like hanging out with friends and gardening, how have those shifted?
Yeah. So I haven't really seen friends very much at all. During the summer of 2020, I did get to see some friends outside, socially distanced. But we used to go to restaurants a lot, go to bars, that type of thing. And that has all changed. Gardening, it was obviously outside, so that wasn't affected as much, but we did the community plot that I garden at. We did have to set up a schedule so that I wasn't gardening at the same time as my plot neighbors, which did affect me in that I didn't get to see the people that I've been gardening with for years because they were on an alternate schedule. And otherwise, I haven't been able to travel, and I usually like to visit friends who live different parts of the country, different states. Didn't get to see family. I enjoy taking like classes, you know, things like that. And all of those things haven't been happening. Also volunteering has been a big thing that I like to do. And all events that I usually volunteer at were canceled. So I basically didn't have a social life, to answer your question. That's sort of what has happened. But what we did, I've gotten more closer with some of my friends by doing virtual happy hours on Zoom. I have a friend that I FaceTime, you know, practically every day. And so we've managed, but it's different.
Yeah. You talked about volunteering. Where do you volunteer at? Or where do you volunteer?
So Shelburne Farms in Shelburne, Vermont, which is a farm and cheesemaking operation and educational facility and also inn and restaurant, has a harvest festival every September where they've been doing it for about 20 years. And I usually volunteer at that. I volunteer at a cheesemaker's festival and also something called the Art Hop in Burlington, which is like a week-long art exhibit with local artists. And so all of those things didn't happen this year.
Yeah, definitely a lot of like events being canceled. I know that's like a big thing.
It's a shame because some of them are fundraisers, you know, and that's, you know, hard when that doesn't, the organization doesn't get to benefit in that way.
Yeah. You were talking about doing Zoom happy hours. And so one of the questions I have was, I guess you kind of already answered it, but has COVID-19 changed your relationships with family and friends and your community? And like, how do you see that changing in just maybe the activities that you're doing or the ways you're interacting with people?
Yeah, so the Zoom happy hour is a good example because I have a group of four friends that we would get together really intermittently because it was just hard. They had families, it's hard to coordinate. But when we all were feeling so isolated, like we would put it on our calendar, like every Thursday at 6 p.m., let's log on to Zoom, and people might have their kids screaming in the background. What I found was that we were actually socializing more on a regular basis during COVID because we just knew that it was important to make that effort. And another thing that I do is yoga, and yoga is usually a in-person, you know, pretty kind of intimate like experience in a class with an instructor. But all of my studios that I visit started doing classes online, and I found that I was actually able to go to more classes because it was more convenient to do them outside of my house or inside my house. And so I think while not being able to travel and see people in person has been bad, I think we've found some opportunities to make the best of it. One thing that I'm really missing is physical touch with people. When I saw my family recently for the first time in over a year in Easter, I couldn't stop touching them because, you know, I haven't hugged anyone in a very long time.
Yeah, I guess that's something like we all like thought about, like physical touch. I like that's such like an important factor and how that is something that was like taken away from the pandemic. But I guess it's like, I don't know, you kind of forget that can have such an impact.
Right. Yeah, you don't think about it until it's gone.
Yeah, exactly. I have a question, I forget. I'll come back to it. So I guess, were you working remotely during this time? Like how you said you had a lot more time to do, or you were able to schedule in other activities. So I guess, how did your schedule, like your work schedule, how did your schedule change?
Yep. So my team went remotely, like immediately, like the second week in March. And it definitely changed my schedule because I didn't have to worry about commuting to work. I didn't have a necessarily long commute before, but you know, it still added time onto my day. I also didn't have to hardly get dressed for work, which saved some time too. But I have been lucky to work on a really flexible team where if I do need to go to an appointment or something in the middle of the day, I can always do that. But now, if I want to take a yoga class in the middle of the day, I have that flexibility and I'll just work later. And it's more accessible because I don't have to shut down from work, like get in the car, change my clothes, drive. I can just, you know, log off intermittently and then just go do something or, you know, go take a walk outside, and it doesn't disrupt my day as much. So the work-life balance has actually been very beneficial during COVID. I told somebody, I think at the very beginning, that I felt like I was living my best life during COVID because I just, which is terrible because it has been such a bad thing for so many people. But I was able to find a good balance that I really enjoyed.
Yeah, for sure. I can definitely see like benefiting from that it's a different work-life balance now. And I guess, yeah, so I guess I'll shift to more questions about employment then. So I guess we kind of already answered this one. How has COVID affected your job? And in what ways, if you wanted to expand more on that one?
Yeah, well, so the work-life balance, working from home and doing meetings remotely is very obvious, but some really kind of scary impacts that happened was working in a hospital. We rely on having patients come into the hospital. That's how we make money. That's how we pay our staff. And when we had to shut down and do only very necessary emergency treatments or procedures for people because of the very beginning of COVID, not knowing what it was going to be like, it really affected us financially, and then just not knowing what it was going to look like going forward. And for most of the beginning of the pandemic, we had to restrict how many patients we could see. We had to put on PPE for, not me, but the clinical folks would have to put on so much more PPE and testing people. It just really affected how many people we could see. And so not that healthcare is all about the financials, but how it affected me was that my team was forced to go slightly part-time during the summer because we were looking at furloughing employees, which is having people not work for a time period. And so we were looking at that, and my team said, okay, how about if we all take 2 weeks off during this time period. So we all sort of give in a little bit. And so honestly, during that time, I was worried about whether I was going to have a job going forward, because it felt like healthcare was going to be changing completely with, you know, people in full protective equipment, like not being able to see many patients because we didn't have testing as available at that moment. We didn't know as much about treating patients. And so every patient who was, you know, came down with COVID, we were worried they were going to be on respirators in the ICU. But now as time goes by, you can see that people who are infected can be, you know, treated and recovered and not be in the ICU, or that we can screen people so much better. And now that we've got the vaccine, things are even better. But yeah, work-wise, it's the first time that I've been worried that my job might be in jeopardy because of how it's affected the healthcare industry.
Do you still have those concerns about the effects of COVID on your employment, or have you seen a shift in these later months as the pandemic's gone on?
I think I'm not as nervous. I think we've, since it's been so long, it's leveled out a little bit. We kind of know what our new normal is. We know we have to be at a reduced capacity. Oh, that is my cat. I brought like toys to throw at him in case he started making noise. I'm so glad this is being recorded for prosperity. So yeah, there still is concern because, you know, if we get another spike or something else happens, like I just don't think we can take that much more, but I think we're in a much better place. So I'm not as worried now.
You mentioned the vaccine, and I kind of, these questions don't talk about it because I believe they were written before the vaccine came out.
Right.
I kind of wanted to ask you about that and how you've seen it, like in a hospital setting, like how has the hospital, or I guess not how's the hospital, but how have you seen the rollout of the vaccines and how has that changed your views on this pandemic? And
yeah, so, well, obviously when, maybe not obviously, but when the state of Vermont got our allocation of vaccines, the hospital was one of the first recipients of most of the vaccine. So it was really all hands on deck to get as many healthcare providers vaccinated as possible. Some of us who work closely with frontline staff in non-clinical ways were also vaccinated right away. And so it didn't change necessarily any of our COVID precautions because so much of the public was still not vaccinated. And we still don't 100% know, you know, whether you can carry COVID when you're vaccinated. And so, but it gave our employees, what I think it gave our, it gave me some peace of mind knowing that I was pretty safe, that even if I did catch it, it would be, you know, not as bad. But going forward, I think we're still in the beginning phases of figuring out, you know, how, when we require someone to be vaccinated to come in. We haven't gotten there yet. You know, we don't ask people to prove their vaccination status. It's still just providing a negative vaccine test in some cases, but I think it's still to be seen. And I think the whole country is in that same situation of figuring out what we do with our COVID vaccination cards and what those mean. But I think the most important thing was keeping our employees safe, because that was, you know, a worry.
Yeah. And you were talking about like not requiring vaccines. Is that, or not like requiring like them to show their card? Is that for patients or for staff members too? Or is that?
Yeah, it's even like with the flu vaccine, I mean, we don't require, you know, it's everyone's choice to get vaccinated. And so it's, I don't think it's ever going to be a requirement. And that's why I say things like our COVID precautions are still in place. Like everyone is still masked and everyone is still socially distant until I think we figure out what it means to be vaccinated versus not, but I'm not an expert on what my hospital's policy is on it. All I know is how, you know, what it has been for me, but yeah, that's that.
Are you still working remotely or have you gone back?
So I've been going back intermittently. We haven't officially opened up 100% for the administrative areas. We're still working on our space, seeing what that looks like, where we eat and everything. And a lot of us have been finding that we enjoy working from home. And so we've been constantly are starting to talk to our supervisors about what the future of work looks like for our team, whether we're partly remote or going in, you know, once a month or once a week. And none of that has to do at this point with feeling, for me, doesn't feel have anything to do with feeling safe about COVID. It has to do with, I just want to make sure I keep my work-life balance nice.
Yeah. That kind of takes me to my next question, because we're talking about this work-life balance and how it's been beneficial for many people, especially for like mental health. So I guess, in what ways do you think that COVID-19 is affecting people's mental health?
I think it's different for everybody. Definitely introverts versus extroverts probably see it. And it's something that I kind of see within my team is that, you know, some people were itching to get back into the office. I think they're itching just to have people around them, chitter chatter, just to see folks. But someone like me who sometimes gets drained from too much commotion around me or too much interaction, but also find that I can focus really well when I'm by myself. So I think there's not one size fits all. And mental health wise, I think, like I said, like I was feeling like I was really benefiting from working from home during this time because everything was sort of on my terms and I didn't have to, you know, I could take a break when I needed to. I didn't feel like I had people talking over my shoulder all the time. So I think it really benefited my mental health. But others, I could see how they were feeling really isolated, that it would be difficult.
Yeah. Yeah. The isolation was a big part of the pandemic. And one of the questions I have talks about that. It talks about how self-isolation and flattening the curve have kind of been these like two key ideas that emerged during the pandemic. So, how have you seen your family, friends, community respond to these requests to self-isolate and flatten the curve?
All of my friends had no problem with self-isolating. Some people had to go into work because of the work they do. And so that was a stress for them, but everyone that I'm close with personally understood the risks and understood the importance of staying home and staying safe. Vermont had really strict and still has pretty strict restrictions. And I know at least in the greater Burlington area, those were complied with pretty well. So it actually didn't feel that hard because I saw everyone around me doing it. But when I see, you know, on the news or hear about other parts of the country or even other parts of the state, I know it's the compliance hasn't been as as good. And I actually have found when I've when I traveled recently and I just noticed the stark difference from the Burlington, Vermont area and another part of New England that not everyone was wearing a mask. And so I think it varies. And I maybe naively just think that Vermont has been, or at least Chittenden County in Burlington has been a nice little bubble of safety during this time.
Yeah, I was going to ask you about that because I know you're in Vermont and New Hampshire lifted their mask mandate. I was wondering, have you seen a response to that in your community? Or what are your thoughts about that?
The thing that, like, on our like neighborhood email forums or on the Vermont Reddit or Burlington Reddit, like things like that, where you hear chitter chatter, it appears that Vermont is saying, don't bring it into Vermont, you people. And so I don't necessarily not want people to visit, but I just wish there was a little bit more consistency of, you know, what the guidelines are. You know, if New Hampshire's doing something, do it in Vermont too. Like, maybe it's a federal thing, maybe it all depends on the leadership in each state, but and infection rates. But I think a lot of the differences that we've been seeing across the country has caused a lot of strife between different populations. And I think that's unfortunate. That's something that has really been negative coming out of this, is blaming, you know, different parts of the country or different populations or different parties. And I think that's a shame, but it doesn't, I mean, I think Vermont we're getting close. I mean, we're saying that you don't have to wear your mask outside anymore. So we're getting there. Mm-hmm. We're just very cautious.
And that's a good thing. So I guess we're kind of touching on, I have some questions more pertaining to like media and government, about like the actual health aspects of COVID. And you kind of mentioned this when you're talking about how you were seeing other states on the news in other parts of the country. So what have been your primary sources of news during the pandemic?
So I listen to NPR radio, and CNN is what I look at on my phone, but then also things like Facebook and Reddit and Instagram, and I guess that's about it. Like, so I know I have what is likely considered a more liberal leaning news source, but it's mostly, I don't watch news on the TV. It just doesn't interest me, and it's usually I'd rather just watch something fun on television versus the news. So but what I was doing, what I did have, like at the very beginning of the pandemic, I put notifications on my CNN app on my phone, and so it was like constantly telling me, like, cases are up to this, and this is how many deaths, and there's another outbreak here. And and I felt like it was important because we were in a pandemic and it felt like we were in a crisis mode and that I needed to know what was going on constantly. But at a certain point, it was just so anxiety causing to have that notification constantly. And so now I've got that off. And when I'm ready to read some news, I'll go read it in my own time and not have it in my face when I don't want it.
Yeah, I think that's important pieces, like, the information's important, but not having it all at once, I guess, that could be overwhelming. I guess, what do you think are important issues that the media is or is not covering during this pandemic? Are there certain things that you wish the media would talk about more or?
I think things we haven't really been hearing much about. I mean, unfortunately, I think news is very sensationalized, and I take it all with a grain of salt because what seems to be trending on the news might just be a flash in the pan, or maybe just it doesn't feel like hard good news sometimes. It just feels very entertainment driven. But what we don't hear much about is what our future is going to look like. I think it's probably because no one really knows what it's going to be like, but it would be nice for people to start admitting that some of these precautions that we're taking might stay in place for a while, or might be our new normal. But otherwise, I think almost too much is being covered by the news. It's making mountains out of molehills, hearing one small thing and then it getting blown out of proportion or being tied to politics, or causing unneeded worry. I kind of wish news would quiet down a little bit.
You mentioned like you think it's sensationalized, what you wouldn't consider good news. So I wonder what would you consider good news?
No, I didn't mean, I guess I mean like I think I just want like fact-based news, unbiased. That's what it is. Unbiased, but the problem is I don't know what that looks like anymore. I mean, I used to think NPR was unbiased, but it's likely not. And I just want the facts, ma'am, is all I want. That like information that is informed and isn't benefiting one political party versus the other and isn't based on rumors or projections or anything like that. I just want the facts. Also a little bit of celebrity gossip maybe, but yeah.
You mentioned that you want the news to talk more about the future, and actually my last couple of questions are about the future. So I guess looking at this pandemic, how do you think this pandemic compares to other big events that have happened in your life?
It's interesting because you hear about the number of deaths being compared to 9/11 a lot. And 9/11, I thought was going to be the biggest thing in my lifetime ever to happen. And it still is, a disturbing and horrible day to remember the tragedy. But when you compare to how many lives we've lost over the past year, I mean, across the world, it's staggering. But I think the problem is that we've sort of become a little desensitized or deadened to it. Like, we hear, oh, another, 200,000 cases today. Like, oh, we only had 1,000 deaths. Like, come on. Like, it's a lot. And now when you're hearing about entire countries, like, what's happening in India right now, I mean, we can lose a whole bunch of that population. And it makes me, I this was not something that happened in my lifetime at all. But you think about the Holocaust and how many Jews we lost, millions and millions, and thinking about how this pandemic has affected either underprivileged or different parts of the world disproportionately. It could change the mix of our population, which I think is crazy. So I just totally ran the gamut of talking about 9/11 and talking about the cultural heritage of our world. But I think it's big. It's big compared to what I said, like the first thing was the Challenger disaster was the biggest thing, and then 9/11, and this, and I know there's been, you know, hundreds of wars and genocides and all kinds of things, but this has affected the entire world so much.
Yeah.
And I don't think everybody feels that is the case, which I think is a shame.
Yeah. On a kind of lighter note.
Please, let's not talk about death.
one of my questions, going back to this idea of the future. So if you were talking to yourself on January 1st, 2020, what was your 2020 supposed to be like? And
oh my gosh.
How did it change?
Yes. I was definitely supposed to take more vacations and visit friends more. My career wasn't supposed to be so, I wasn't supposed to be feeling so uneasy about my career, about my job. Yeah, I guess, I was just supposed to have a normal, what I consider a normal year, but does that answer that question?
Yeah, and I guess, what can you imagine your life being like in a year?
Yeah, it's interesting. I think I'm still gonna be rocking this work-life balance in some way, which is nice. And I think when I do get to travel and visit friends that I haven't seen, or even just see friends locally in person, I think I'm going to be appreciating it so much more. I think those visits are going to mean, they're not going to just be how, like, they just were always the expectation or the assumed, like they were just normal life back then, and now there's something special and to be cherished. And so I think a year, you know, this next year and a year from now, it's going to be living more gratefully.
I like that. I guess lastly, this is kind of a broader question too. Knowing what you know now, what do you think that individuals, communities, or governments need to keep in mind for the future?
I think communication, like making sure the public is aware of something right away, providing good evidence, clear communication with that. And focus on the importance of everyone working together. This was one of those things where it felt like we needed to all be on the same page, or we needed to do this all as a team, whether it's just our local community or the world as a whole. And I think, you know, like Vermont's a great example of that, where, you know, we kind of had this spirit of, we've got our safety bubble of Vermont, we're all gonna do what we need to do. And we felt like we were all doing it as a team. At least that's what I feel like. And so I think using that spirit in the future, I think would be good.
Yeah, definitely. This idea of working together, you talked about it in the context of like the entire state. Did you see it in your smaller community or even just your work life as well?
Yeah, well, work definitely, just because we're a healthcare facility. It is a really unique situation where you're working with people who are healthcare people and know about the virus and know what it means. And everyone agreed that we needed to, you know, react a certain way. But I found that it seemed, at least with a lot of like the local businesses in Burlington, like everybody, everyone seemed on the same page, and maybe it is just this community spirit that we have in like a smaller community, that we did sort of have that spirit of we're all in this together. And I'm trying to think, there had been some, like over the winter, I think our governors told us to like put on our Christmas lights like constantly. It was like put a light out for Vermont or something like that. It was something so that we would all, you know, feel like we could see each other, even though we couldn't see each other. So little things like that, where I think people were trying to stay connected and feel like a team during this time.
Yeah, that's so interesting. I didn't know you guys put a light up for Vermont thing. That's kind of reminds me of like how they like all rung the bells in England for all like the workers. Yeah.
Yeah, it was like around the holidays. And you know, I live across from a park, and they lit up an entire barn, and then people would come and bring their own like lanterns, and I don't know, it was just a really neat thing.
Yeah. Oh, that's super cool.
Yeah.
Yeah, I think those are all the questions that I have. Is there anything else that I didn't touch on that you would like to speak to about anything related to the pandemic?
No, I think you touched on a lot of great aspects of the pandemic. And yeah, this has been a great conversation.
Awesome. Well, thank you for your time. I'm going to end the recording.
Thank you.